This is the Rebel HR Podcast, the podcast about all things innovation in the people space. I'm Kyle Rode. Let's start the show. Welcome back, Rebel HR listeners. Extremely excited for the conversation today. With us, we have Alin Bailey. She is a talent futurist. She is currently the Executive Director of Hiring Success at Smart Recruiters, and we're going to be talking about all things futurism related to recruiting. Alin, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
We are excited to have you with us. We also have Molly Burdess. Molly, thanks as always for joining us today.
Of course.
All right, so one of the first things that I want to talk about a little bit is what got you interested in being a talent futurist and ultimately working for your current organization, Smart Recruiters?
Absolutely. That's a great question. I should probably ask myself that question more often. How did I end up where I am today? You know, it's a long and winding trail, and I'm not going to give you the long story of it. But what I'll tell you is I really have been spending a majority of my career in doing various forms of experience design, right? Fundamentally taking my background and understanding in psychology and how people make decisions, combining it with some work early on in my career, understanding marketing and kind of how we drive a marketing decision making, and connected all that together and became really passionate about this idea of how do people relate to work? And in particular, how do people find the work that connects to them in the most relevant ways that they're most excited about, right? And they're most passionate about. And I know that, you know, in today's world, sometimes that feels a little Pollyannish to think about the idea of connecting people to jobs, not just because they need a paycheck, but because they find some value in it for them. It builds them as a person. It connects them to the world in really unique ways. But for me, that's what drives me. And that's why I work where I work now. Previous to this, I worked for a multinational driving TA strategy, and that was actually my first realm, that 10 years actually focusing just on talent acquisition and in the talent acquisition space. Previous to that, I spent a lot of time in employee experience and kind of connecting the dots on that part of the talent cycle. Throughout all of that, I have been deeply interested in the connection between technology and how we work and how that connects to the story of us as, you know, worker bees or workers in the engine. How does that connect to the technologies that are available to us and how we operate with them? So, yeah, so that's my, was not supposed to be my long-winded story, but it is. That's how I got here. And it's inherently, it's all about the fact that I, one, don't do anything that I intended or trained to do. I have evolved everything day to day. I learned something new. And I'm inherently just very curious. And I think that's probably how I ended up doing what I do.
I love it. And I think, you know, if you are somebody who is interested in the study of human behavior, talent acquisition is a great place to work. Right. It's just a great space to be in.
Right. It's like it's a hotbed of all the things that, you know, theoretically we think are happening from a human behavior perspective. You can look and you can see it in a very short period of time, all the core elements in play. So it's a fabulous place to play around with how people connect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes I feel like the more time I spend in the talent acquisition space or the longer that I'm in my career, I realize the less I know about human behavior.
Right. That's exactly it. Right. Or sometimes you realize, oh, I knew that was going to happen, but I forgot.
Right. Oh, yeah. I hired a person just like that 5 years ago. Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. It happens. We're all human. But what I want to really, you know, pick your brain on a little bit is this aspect of technology and how this interplays into the future of talent acquisition and the work that we do in human resources. And so, you know, there's a lot of news in the headlines about first of all, things like a recession coming and, you know, there's TA departments where there's layoffs happening. And now we've got this new kind of this wave of generative AI, which could be, in my opinion, a little bit of a game changer from where we've been in the past. So as you look at this whole picture in your space, how do you see the future of work looking as it relates to the structure of how we acquire talent within our organizations?
Yeah, I think you started to go down a really important path that you started to lay this out. It is, we are at a point in time when there is an intersection of multiple things happening at the same time that we don't, I think anybody who tells you they know how that's going to play out is lying, right? Nobody knows. We don't know from moment to moment how this is all can play out. What we can do is be really alert to how all these things are impacting each other and how that's in turn impacting human behavior, right? Which is connected to, you know, how people look for jobs, why they look for jobs. So I think the story here actually starts pre-COVID. And I think that this is the story of individual empowerment at work and how individuals were already starting, even pre-COVID, to question things like, how are decisions getting made? Why am I getting paid this amount? What is my value here? And what is my value in my relationship with this company, right? Do I sustain it? Does it make sense to work one place for 50 years or should I only work there for 10? What does it look like have a degree or not to have a degree? These were all questions that we were asking, and the downstream implications of that in the TA space pre-COVID were questions like, should we start having degree requirements? Should we start getting rid of those? How do we start to apply assessments so that we're not looking just at skills, but we're also starting to do psychometric assessments? These things were starting to happen, right? We're starting to see innovators starting to work in that space. COVID happened, and the implication of that was we learned a couple of things. One, we learned that our ability to change our work processes were more adaptable than we ever thought they were, right? We literally, the entire world changed the way in which it worked and the way and the expectations it set for itself in a 48-hour period, right? And everybody, listen, I don't know how many of you, I myself had spent years banging my head against the wall, listening to people tell me that change takes a long time. It's like, well, yeah, it does sometimes, and sometimes it does. It all depends, right?
Yeah.
So we learned a couple of things. We learned that people were already examining what their relationship to work was. We now learned that people are much more adaptable to change than we realize, and that the change in how they operate and think about work could happen at a much quicker pace, right? So people were playing with the idea of remote work, hybrid work before COVID happened. Suddenly, all the mythological barriers around why you couldn't do it went away. And now people started to realize, oh, maybe I like this. Maybe this operates differently. Companies now had to start thinking about when it's time to go back. Do we retrofit back to our old way of working, or will people even be able to do that? Or will we have to move forward to a new way? So, and I start here by saying the first issue that we're dealing with is individuals' relationship with work and their expectation of what work is to them, how they work, where they work, and when they work has fundamentally shifted. It's been a shift a long time in the making, right? But now we've had a kind of a crisis or a pressure point that has sparked a faster change in the space. Now we combine that with companies from a financial perspective who are now looking at talent and are back in their cycle of realizing that they have to, one, they need talent that is based, that has skills that will evolve over time versus talent that is stagnant in very specific jobs or roles, right? I think it's impossible to say today, particularly in the knowledge worker space, that you can walk into a role today and expect that your job description isn't going to adjust or redefine within the next 6 to 18 months of that job, right? Because that's just a constant. And that's a new wave of pace of change within the business. And the business leaders are looking at it saying, I'm less concerned about a job title somebody's had, but the skills that they're bringing to me and their ability to look forward to say, what skills do I need in the future? So that changes the dynamic of workforce planning. It changes the dynamic of how we assess talent. It changes how we think about learning and development. So it kind of fundamentally shifts the relationship of what the company needs. So employees or talent has shifted what they want from their relationship. and companies have shifted what they want from the relationship. But none of us are talking to each other about that yet, by the way. We're all just kind of skirtling around each other, pretending that nothing has changed, right? And then you add the third core element, right, which is technology and the advances of technology to allow us to approach problems that we've had or situations that we've had for a long time, plus new ones that are now emerging, and be able to solve them in different ways than we've done before. The fundamental shift for generative AI, from my perspective, is monumental, not just in the talent space, but across the working world. I think we clearly need to understand the difference here. For those of you who are tech junkies like I am, it took me a while to catch on and realize that generative AI isn't just like a new cool buzzword, but there is a fundamental difference in how it operates. I was in the early days of doing natural language processing work, trying to bring a chatbot into an HR support organization, you know, 15 years ago. And I remember going through the hassle of trying to train it, right? That was before we even knew how to do it at mass, right? With the things that we have out there today. And I left that experience saying, I'm never doing this again. This is the most ridiculous, worthless point of effort ever, right? That was also the time period where I looked at somebody I worked with who was really hot on QR codes and told them, nobody uses your darn QR code. Quit trying to tell me to put it on things, right? So what do we know today? We know I was wrong in both cases. Right? Today, even before generative AI, natural language processing and trainable AI, machine learning-based AI systems and algorithms have become really predominant across the industry. We see them all over the place and everything from how we source to how we screen to how we communicate with candidates. So that's already in place. We also know things like triggers or the ability to pull up old technologies like QR codes and et cetera that we thought maybe weren't really viable became really viable when the environment changed, right? And people suddenly didn't want to hand out menus and suddenly were using QR codes, right? I mean, who knew I was going to have like five QR code readers on my phone, right? So those things started to change. Now you start looking at how we use that technology has changed. And then you bring in something like generative AI, which fundamentally can solve and do a lot of these things that we've been trying to do with algorithm, or that's not the right word for it, but non-generative AI, kind of AI that we had to train, right? But it can do it quicker, faster, and more effectively because what's the fundamental difference? It trains itself. So as somebody who was in the early days and had to train this thing, I can tell you that was a pain in the butt. And it was filled with bias. I would have told people up and down that using AI to do things like screen candidates or to make selection choices was a bad idea because it was always fundamentally flawed because it required humans to train it, and humans are fundamentally biased, right? So it only became more biased, not less. We knew that. We saw that with the early versions of what came out with Amazon and others years ago. Generative AI is fundamentally different. Humans do not need to train it. What we have done is scientists have actually built ways for it to learn and to build mechanisms to train itself. What does that mean? It means that it starts to walk around or work around some of the concerns around bias that we had. Its ability to learn or to be able to adapt to different types of tasks that we ask it to do is 10 times, 50 times faster than what we've seen before. And its applicability in different spaces becomes pretty big, right? The impact to us as a talent world is a couple things, right? One, we are now at that precipice where we get to make that decision. Are we going to do what we did when ATSs first came out and just take paper advertising and put it onto an ATS system? Right? Put it into technology and just use our old process and move it forward? Or are we now going to look at the technologies and the advancements in front of us, the changes in the dynamic between what businesses need and what talent is looking for, and actually use this as an opportunity to change not just the technologies we use, but our overall process and solve some of those bigger problems we've had? I think that's the moment we're in.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's fascinating. And for somebody like me, so, you know, I don't claim to be a tech guru by any means, but you know, it's fascinating to think about this being different because you don't have to train it. And I remember I remember those chat bots, and it's just like, no, that's not what I asked. No, that's not. No, no, don't do this. No, it's this. No, it's this document, not that. No, that's the wrong policy. And, you know, I've been playing around with some of this generative AI, and some of the things that it pulls out, it's like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. You know, how does this change the context of the question that I was asking, or the article that I was thinking about? It's pretty fascinating. I'm curious to understand, you know, because that has always been the argument about AI and recruiting is the bias issue, right? Because people train AI and right. We are inherently biased, AI is inherently biased. So as we think about generative AI, is it possible that it's actually, because it's less biased, it's actually better at selection than we are as faulty human beings?
I think that's a reasonable hypothesis. I say this, right? I'm going to say a couple of things here that are going to make many of my friends in the TA world want to shoot me, right? Don't, please don't. But the first is, one, yeah, I think we're in a space now where if done right, the technology is going to be better than us in making choices and decisions. And we're going to have to learn to rely on it differently. So now my questions become things with technology that are different, right? I had worked with a brilliant individual, I think Tyler Weeks. He's now running analytics, I think, at Marriott in the TA space. Worked with him for years. And one of the first things that he told me when we were starting to go into the early spaces of using technology to take over sort of the people process in TA was he said, we need metrics and ways in which to measure the effectiveness of technology the same way we measure the impact and effectiveness of people in the process. Mm-hmm. I think that, to me, has stuck with me. And as we start to go into this new era, is exactly what we need, right? So now the question becomes, maybe it can make better decisions. We need to actually test that hypothesis. We need to put that out there and not be afraid of it and not to kind of be ostriches and put our heads in the sand and say, no, people are always better. Maybe they're not. Right? Maybe there's better ways for us to be leveraging our humanity than there. Right? So let me think about that. The same question comes up from, you know, my friends in the recruitment marketing space who in the content space. I don't know about you, but as I go through LinkedIn and look at people's, you know, comments around ChatGPT, I can tell you right away whether they're a content writer or whether they, and that's what their job is, or whether they're just an enthusiast, right? The content writers inherently or inevitably will tell you in their posts, listen, you can never sound as human as I can sound. You're right. It can't. But at the end of the day, let's think about it. For most companies and most businesses, they don't have the time, money, or resources to have a human who's writing for them in the first place. I mean, we have had the issue of providing feedback to candidates for like the beginning of time, right? What are we afraid of by now letting generative AI actually go in and summarize interview notes with a couple of guidelines we can frame it with to actually provide relevant feedback to candidates? We're worried it doesn't sound like the human who wrote it. I bet it probably will sound better because we didn't do anything before.
More than likely.
better than someone stumbling over their words and like trying not to hurt someone's feelings.
Right. Yeah. But to me, that's an example of where we have to, as an industry, realize that we need to take our heads out of the sand a little bit and not be afraid that it is going to force us to think differently about what we do, the value of it and how we do it, and to think differently about what our roles now become in helping support that. And there won't be a role for everybody, but there'll be new roles that we didn't know of too. So if we start going there, we can move faster. I'm always for moving faster, which is probably drives people crazy, but yeah.
Looking toward the future of talent acquisition, what do you see some of those roles being?
So I'm going to give you a couple that are recently just coming to my attention. First off, prompt designers, people who can build appropriate prompts to make these AI engines produce the best results. You know, there's a whole cottage industry being created around this. I had no idea because I've been doing some research to go out there and get services. People provide TA services into our marketplace and realizing that there are people who have been in the technology and integration space who are now going into this prompt design space. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. That's new. I think that you're going to need more experienced designers. I think people who are able to examine and evaluate the experience and decide what type of experience they're wanting to create and how to measure and test that experience. I think you're going to need more people who are competent at connecting the dots between multiple systems. So those are, you know, your traditional TA ops roles, but let's talk about them in a little bit richer sense, right? Their ability to build data lakes, connect data storage, be able to translate data. You know, the good news is technology allows us to capture a lot of information. The bad news is we still have not been really good at understanding how to tell a story with that information that's meaningful to us. I think those are the sorts of roles that are going to increase. And I think that, I think those are the spaces. Thinking about how people now insert themselves in a way to help drive the paths for process design, how to connect the technologies, and how to be able to analyze the output of technology successfully to understand what to do next.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's fascinating. It reminds me of, you know, when I was a kid and I was like picking my career day, like job, you know, like, hey, I want to be a police officer or a doctor or whatever. And they're like, and then there's this stat that like, however many percent of jobs don't even exist that will be available when you graduate from college. And like, you know, prompt designer is one of those like, you write sentences for AI to generate stuff.
But you wonder what's fascinating is that it's organically happening. I have a teenage daughter. She's finishing up her freshman year in high school and trying to decide what courses to take or, you know, what is she interested in and et cetera. And I'll tell you, it's hard for me as an adult to have a conversation now that says, this is where the leading edge is. This is where you should be thinking about moving your careers and your interests towards. And you start thinking about diving in and what your college major be. I don't think we have any. I think it used to be we didn't kind of know, but everybody, there was a few basic areas. Now I think it's completely evolving. Now I will tell you is she'd probably be an excellent prop designer. Why? Because she figured out within weeks of ChatGPT that there were a whole bunch of different extensions she could get for her different social media apps. And she has, you know, an entire life based on building prompts and connecting information and stories using these generative AI models, right? I'm like, oh my God, I have no clue. I have to go to her and ask her how to do it. So that's what's going to happen, right? These things will evolve. The roles will happen. And it will be people like us who kind of turn around and go, could somebody tell me how to do this?
Help me. What do I do? That's a good point. I'm gonna have to think about that as I think about my HR org structure, future state. Like, right. Who's my generative AI prompts designer? Right. Although I have a few younger people on my team, I think would probably rock that role real quick.
But. Right. The problem, like I said, again, probably know how to do it. And we just never gave it like a sense of importance, right?
Right, right. All right, Rebel HR community, I'm extremely excited to talk about one of my favorite events of the year. It is that time of the year for the Iowa SHRM State Conference. This year's theme is the Great Reset, the future of HR. The event's going to be in Des Moines, Iowa, October 11th through the 13th. I will be there, and I cannot wait to see all of you there. We're going to have a lot of fun as a Rebel HR community. It is a 2.5-day event. It will kick off with a pre-conference workshop with Tina Marie Woolfield entitled Wake Up HR and Get Curious. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, guys? Awesome live keynotes from Josh Evans and Sherry Harley, as well as amazing other speakers I cannot wait to listen to. I can also not wait to network and talk about how HR can change the world for the better and talk to all of you. You'll be able to get all the PDCs that you need, as well as some awesome vendor and sponsor exhibit hall prizes, and most importantly, some live networking opportunities. To learn more, go to www.iastateshrmconference.org. That's www.iastateshrmconference.org. See you there, community. Rebel on. Going back to what you talked about, the people who are the content creators, who are, you know, professional editors, copywriters, and have done a wonderful job over the course of their career, now being concerned about, you know, this generative AI coming into the space and you know, really kind of changing the structure of organizational and societal communication. I do also wonder if it's just part of this is, you know, grammar and some of the things that we used to care a lot about. It doesn't seem to be as important anymore. It's more about delivering the content in an efficient and effective way, as opposed to delivering it in an elegant or you know, a flowery way. I wonder if that's what we're going to continue to see in the space.
I love where you're going with that. So that's a great example of where we can start to see what's happening just societally and start to see it translate into the world of work, right? So how do people communicate? How has it shifted, right? You know, I remember it used to be on the phone, right? So then it was about kind of, I mean, I was taught how to answer the phone as a kid by answering it with my, this is the so-and-so resident, so-and-so speaking, right? Can you imagine answering the phone like that today? Now I say that and most people go, I can't imagine answering the phone. Who calls, right? And then we moved into emails, and emails were these, very crafted. We had to be really careful about how we constructed them. And then people started using text messages, and now they're using things like Teams and Slack. And it's like a ongoing constant communication that's half built by emoji, right? Our whole version of how we communicate to each other has shifted, which means what we need in order to communicate to others has to shift too. So great content creators. I love to read. I spend a lot of time adapting and looking at literature. I think it's important. I think it's important for our culture. I love great writing. I like to write myself. I consider myself a writer. But I understand in the world of work, that may not be my value add anymore.
Yeah, I think it's powerful to think about it that way. But I do think this is kind of the reality, and specific to the human resources function, we need to be wide open to this, what could be a fairly big change in our department as well, and be aware and embrace it. Because, I think about something as simple as organizational communication. A lot of times corporate communication is owned by the HR person. Small company certainly gets delegated to us quite a bit. Larger companies might have a communications department. But if there's a tool that can help me more elegantly communicate to different audiences and tailor that message more efficiently, then I look at that like, oh, that's a great use case, right? And then I think about my organization is international. If I can take this generative AI and translate it more quickly and more effectively, so that it's in the vernacular of the local group that I'm trying to communicate with, then boy, I just 10x my communication capabilities. I checked a really big box that's been a pretty big struggle for me for years, right?
Right. And the good news is you can do all those things. I know, because I just literally did them. In an attempt to launch something, we're a small and scrappy team, was launching a new program. And I realized that none of the communications had been written or crafted about it. And I was like, I do not have time for this. I have to answer, work emails. I got to deal with what's going on Slack, et cetera, but I got to get this communication out. That was actually part of what prompted me to get into the ChatGPT thing. I was like, oh, fine. I'll open it up, right? It's not going to be any different than anything else. And I literally within moments realized, oh my God, I can do all the things you just said. Save me time, effort, focus, and create something that's better, more predictive, and more valuable to my end user. It's like, oh, okay, awesome. Off we go, right? And I think that's for all of us, that moment where we all have to kind of go, okay, what problem does it start to solve for us that's very specific to a thing we need? And then we start to see what it can do for others and we start to feel more comfortable going out and leveraging it.
You guys have a lot more knowledge and expertise than I do. And I'm assuming there's going to be other HR professionals out there like me. So for us who don't have all this insight, what should our takeaway be? What do we do with this information, and where do we go from here?
So I think the very first thing I would tell people to do is realize that there is a distinct difference between generative AI and AI that we've kind of used in the past, and go in. It won't take you very long. I speak like I'm a technologist. I'm not. I couldn't code a thing to save my life. But what I can do is I can go do a quick Google search. You can too. And find a couple things and just read one or two things to start to understand the distinct difference. And then let it sit with you so you can start to think about what that means to your process. I think the other thing I would tell people to do is, or the takeaway I would have is, you have to look outside of your immediate processes, role, job, in order to understand what you can be doing next or what you should be focused on next. You have to feel, you have to start expanding your view so that you're looking at what's happening in the economy, what's happening in, you know, how people are relating to communication, how people are relating to their consumer interactions. You start to see changes in how websites are designed. You don't have to, you know, I'm not telling people that you have to, like, you know, be really focused and have like a, you know, a notebook where you're taking notes on all these things, but you should be putting some time aside in your mind to look outside of your day to day, see what's happening in the world and ask yourself the question, how could that impact what I do today? Or what do I see coming based on what I just saw happen with the Amazon site, right?
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I mean, for us that want to, you know, needs to lead our organizations, we have to have that information. So perfect advice. Thank you.
Well, I think the reality is if you don't take some time to educate yourself, somebody else in your organization is. I guarantee you some of your employees are already using this stuff, whether you realize it or not. There's an interesting kind of, a little bit of an ethical debate that's probably going to occur within our organizations and our industries. But then at the end of the day, as people professionals, we need to be wide awake to the fact that the landscape is shifting as it relates to talent. And if there's a tool that could either replace us or empower us to be more effective, efficient, then we need to be at the forefront of this, because the difference between AI and generative AI is distinct. And I actually think the HR professionals that figure out, okay, how do I leverage this tool effectively and get out in front of this, are going to be significantly more successful than those who are afraid of it and just say, oh, this sounds like another passing fad. I don't know how this works. I think this is bigger, much bigger than that.
I agree with you 150%, 100%. As long as I'm getting questions, and this happens frequently, professional HR organization, every once in a while ping me for questions. When the questions are still, should I be concerned if somebody is using ChatGPT to work on their resume, or should I be concerned if somebody's using ChatGPT to respond to an assessment question, right? Or at school, they're asking questions about whether they can use it to do reports. My answer is, if that's what you're worried about, you're missing the point, because you can put all the rules you want into place. People are going to do that. So just let that go. Let your control and, over-processed mind, let that piece go. And now instead think about, what does this mean to how people think about how they do work? Right?
Absolutely. So here's a little fun thought exercise for you. So I just went into ChatGPT and I said, write a resume objective for Kyle David Rode, HR professional. Here's the objective. This literally took me 2 seconds as you were responding. Yeah. Highly motivated and experienced HR professional with a proven track record of success, implementing strategic HR initiatives, optimizing talent, blah, 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 blah. I guarantee you, if somebody knows how to use ChatGPT, it is being used to write resumes right now. Just accept it.
Of course.
Like, it's happening.
I feel like I've read that before.
You know, all the power to them. In fact, I would love it if somebody would, like, put on the top said, written by ChatGPT. Because in my mind, we should look at that and go, hot damn, this person knows what's happening and knows how to use this tool. And they might know how to write prompts. And I'm going to need a prompt writer soon. So, you know.
I optimized and maximized my time efficiency by utilizing ChatGPT to write the resume you have in front of you.
That's right. Exactly.
All details are accurate.
That's right.
Right? Like, smarter, not harder.
That's exactly it, right? Because what are businesses always saying, that they want to get productivity out of everybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get there. So.
It's not. Yeah. It's something to embrace, in my opinion. Now, I do think that. I think that in the talent acquisition space specifically, it is going to become a little bit of an ethical discussion and an ethical dilemma. I do think there's a little bit of an identity crisis that might be occurring for a talent acquisition professional that has cultivated their craft for decades. Yeah. And now they're being challenged by generative AI. I'll be fascinated to see how this continues to evolve in that space. And I guarantee you there's probably going to be more and more and more tools that come to the forefront based around this principle. So fascinated to see what happens.
Yeah, agreed.
And we'll see if we use QR codes in another 5 years.
Right, yeah, I know. I'm telling you, right? That's my big aha, the one I missed.
I wouldn't have got that one either.
No.
Yeah, I still the first time I saw one at a restaurant, I was like, oh, QR codes. That's so like, that's like vintage.
That's so like 1990 something, right? Or like early 2000s. Like, really?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, right. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about those. And now they're everywhere.
Now they're everywhere. So,
but this has been an absolutely wonderful conversation. I think, you know, really a poignant topic. It's something that I think it's a good challenge for all of us to be aware of, and get knowledgeable about. And so really appreciate you enlightening our listeners. I want to shift gears and I want to get into the Rebel HR flash round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Question number one, where does HR need to rebel?
Where does HR need to rebel? In our metrics. We need to stop using the same old transactional metrics and start getting into the business of connecting our value to business value. Cost per hire, time to fill are not business metrics. Those are transactional capacity metrics, which tell us nothing about the value we provide to the company that we're working with.
So what is one metric you would recommend?
I would recommend, I'll give you a couple, right? So instead of time to fill, I think velocity is an important one. Velocity means I'm not worried about how much, what is my average time to fill? I want to know when a role needs to be filled and was I able to meet the deadline to hit that role? And they can have a variety of different deadlines, right? So velocity allows me to take that same component, but connect it to the business value, which is having people in seats when you need them to accomplish the work. So that's one. We'll give you that one.
Perfect.
All right. Question number two, who should we be listening to?
So I've got a million on my list, but I'm going to give you three voices that I listen to, one that's in the HR space and two that are not or not necessarily. So from the HR space, I will tell you, if you haven't yet, you need to listen to Torin Ellis. You need to hear what he's talking about in the DE&I space. It is an honest, empowering, and really impactful voice. And I think as we think about, we're talking about technology here, but it's also about how we relate to who we are at work. And there's a lot happening in that space. And he has some interesting voices. The other two I'll give you actually come maybe more from the experience design space. The first is Brian Solis, Solis. Who is at Salesforce now, but he's been a tech futures for a long time. He's really, really driven a lot of work around building experience journeys and understanding the impact of technology to those experience journeys. Really fresh stuff he constantly has there. And then like my new favorite to troll on LinkedIn and everywhere else is Heather McGowan. She is a keynote speaker, speaks a lot on the future of work, a lot on human capital, really about the new paradigm of work. And I think she's got some really cool stuff. So in my mind, those are my top three at the moment.
Love it. Love it. Perfect. Last question. How can our listeners connect with you and learn more?
Oh, absolutely. Great. Well, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Alyn Bailey, Allynbailey. I would tell you to connect with me on Twitter, but I've been really bad on that lately. So just connect with me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place to get a hold of me. And then if you want to reach me directly, you're welcome to email me. I am a.bailey@smartrecruiters.com. And I love to chat with people.
Perfect. And we will have all that information in the show notes. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today and enlightening us and educating us on some of the things that might be coming in the near future in some areas that we need to be focused on in human resources. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was great.
All right. That does it for the Rebel HR podcast. Big thank you to our guests. Follow us on Facebook at Rebel HR Podcast, Twitter @Rebel HR Guy, or see our website at rebelhumanresources.com. The views and opinions expressed by Rebel HR Podcast are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of any of the organizations that we represent. No animals were harmed during the filming of this podcast.
Baby.